Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690. Hockey insider Pierre McGuire, brought to you by the Old Orchard Pub. Five locations, with a sixth now open in Chattahoochee, and by Dagwood Sandwiches and Salads.
Monday, just past 5 p.m., time for Pierre McGuire. Good afternoon, sir. How you doing?
Very well, Connor. Good to visit with you.
You as well. Happy Easter to you and yours.
Thank you.
So, we don't know the extent, but let's just start with if this is anything resembling significant, if he is going to miss time, do the Canadians have the horses to overcome the loss that Pacioretty would be?
Everybody wonders about that. Nobody really knows for sure. You'd like to think that somebody's going to seize the moment and stand and deliver, but you just never really know. Obviously, he's a very important part of their team, not just leadership-wise, but putting points on the board. He opens up a lot of ice for a lot of other players, which is obviously really important. But it's not going to be easy if he's gone for a long period of time.
As a coach or a general manager, would there be any guys in that room in particular that you'd maybe tap on the shoulder and say, hey, listen, you know, we need you to step up here at this point?
Well, I don't think you need to do that, because I do think guys are aware of the situation. It's pretty apparent. But this is where you need the power play to be much more efficient. This is where PK and Andre Markov have to make a difference. This is where you hope Galchenyuk can take his game to another level. And this is where you have to hope that P.A. Parenteau steps up and does something more offensively than what he's shown this year. A lot of it's due to injury. But there's some guys that you need to really elevate if in fact, Max has gone for a long time. Listen, the Boston Bruins are life and death to make the playoffs because they couldn't replace the 30 goals of Jerome Iginla. Max Pacioretty's got 37 goals.
And the Canadians probably as a team, we could say, are a little bit more offensively challenged overall than the Bruins are.
Well, I'll tell you this right now. You take Pacioretty's 37 goals off the Canadians roster for next year, they're not making the playoffs.
Yeah, it's something like 20% of their total goals this year.
That's all. It's the same. Yeah. It's why I said what I said at the beginning of the year to Mitch about Boston. They've got to find somebody, and they were hoping it would be Riley Smith, but it obviously hasn't been, that could replace the 30 goals of Jerome Iginla. 30 goals, a ton of goals.
Obviously, teams really key in on Max Pacioretty. Pierre, it's part of the game plan defensively. If Pacioretty is not in the lineup, which players do you think are going to start seeing some extra attention?
They'll start loading up on your centermen who aren't very big, and they'll go after Galchenyuk. Those will be the guys that will get a little bit more attention, but they'll load up on your centers. They'll break down Desharnais and Plekanec as hard as they can, because most of your wingers aren't really the nifty one-on-one types outside of Galchenyuk. They're going to overpower a defense. So they know that the Canes have to score a lot of their goals through playmaking. So they'll go after your two centermen big time.
Has Pacioretty become the most important skater on the Canadiens?
That's hard to say. I mean, PK Subban's pretty darn important, Rod. Andre Markov's pretty darn important. I mean, is Max as important as anybody in the roster? Absolutely. Is he their best pure offensive player? You betcha. So I would say, I mean, if you're going to do it that way, you'd say he's the upper echelon and it's hard to replace him.
The win last night, Pierre, you talked about the need for other guys to step up, naming P.A. Parenteau as one of them, and they did do that. We heard Carey Price talking about that on the way, and nice to see that happen in one game against a Florida Panthers team. But how important is it at this point to the Canadians who've been involved in so many tight games this year? Is it significant at all to get a result that wasn't a nail-biter for once last night?
Oh, that helps a lot. You also have to remember who you're playing against. I think that's an important thing. Florida obviously knew they'd been knocked out from the night before, so they're a little bit disappointed. It's a little bit like Colorado the other night. Colorado goes into Los Angeles after losing to Anaheim. They knew they were knocked out from the earlier game where Winnipeg played in the afternoon and won against Vancouver, so that eliminated them, and they only had 10 shots on goal. So, I mean, that's a hard psyche to deal with. So I'm sure the Florida Panthers were dealing with that, the psyche of the situation. They're going to be loaded up. Well, when they play Montreal, because I can tell you, or Detroit, because that's going to be important for Detroit, really important for Detroit. And then you just hope you don't get anybody hurt the last game of the season when you play Toronto.
Do all the close games that they've played so many one-goal games, does it take a toll over the course of a season? Does it take a toll mentally on a team?
It can, but I think the biggest thing Montreal has is Carey, and Carey's very comfortable in those one-goal games. I watched their game on Friday night with New Jersey. Tokarski obviously played instead of Price, and you could see there's just a little bit, and Markov wasn't in the lineup, and that might have helped, especially after the Gomez penalty. But you can see that the team is comfortable, and they trust their goalies, but they really have faith in Carey Price. I mean, that's pretty apparent. And so that helps. It takes a little bit of that mental anxiety that you're alluding to, Connor, off the table.
When the game started, Pierre, Devontae Smith-Pelly was playing on the top line with Desharnais and Pacioretty. What kind of message do you think the coaching staff was trying to send them?
Get going. This is a good opportunity for you. Get going and play. Listen, coaches send messages all the time, but the biggest one you can say to a guy is, we're putting you up here because we want you to succeed. Get out there and do something. You know, I remember telling one of my former players, you're getting an opportunity to play with some really good players. Make sure you take advantage of it, and make sure that when you look at me tomorrow, you don't have to say, I'm sorry I disappointed you, or sorry I disappointed myself. Make sure you can look me in the eye tomorrow and say, I belong with that group. You know, that's an important thing for a player and a coach to be on that kind of a communication plane.
It's been a bit of an unusual schedule the last few days, Pierre. They had the back-to-back against Washington, then in New Jersey Thursday, Friday. Day off in Florida Saturday. Odd start time face-off last night. Day off in Florida today. Practice tomorrow, then come home. That means a day off down in the sun Saturday and Monday. Is this a time where you take as much recuperation time as you can, or do you try and get practice time in when possible?
It depends on how mature the players are in dealing with this. I'll give you a case in point. The Minnesota Wild were a team that were doing fantastically well. Everybody knows that. And then they had a four-day period where they didn't play and they didn't really practice. And they've had a tough time since. So you've got to make sure that you keep hard on it all the time. This is a time of the year where you don't want to become comfy cozy. You want to heal up, and I think it's smart that they stayed in the sun and are healing up. It's been a pretty tough winter for everybody in the Northeast. So that's actually smart. I have no, but don't be hanging out at the beach, if you know what I mean. Get to the rink or get to a gym and do something, but they have to do something. If they just get weary and don't do much, that's going to hurt them.
Yeah, you got to stay away from our broadcast team. Dan and Sergio were telling me yesterday that they're planning on spending all day running up and down the beach. I can't picture either of those guys running on the beach, but that's what they said.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Pierre, the power play on Friday night, and it feels like a distant memory, but we haven't talked to you since Friday. So on Friday, they get a five-minute major for the Gomez elbow to the face of Alexi Emelin. They don't score. They get one shot, a 50-footer from Alexi Emelin. They get a five-on-three, a lengthy five-on-three. They fail to score there, and in overtime, they can't convert a four-on-three. So every time it looks like maybe they've turned a corner, they have another night like this.
And the power play goal that they scored, Plekanec's goal, was a heck of a shot. I mean, that was ripped. So that's really not a power play schematic. It was right off a face-off, so that really didn't involve a play off the power play. I talked about it before, Connor. I feel strongly about it, too. I think most of the fans probably do. It's great to say you have all these different pieces, but Markov just shows you how important he is. I understand why he wasn't playing on Friday, but Markov's really important to the well-being of that team, especially on the power play.
So do you look at it from the power play perspective? Do you say, and this is a fact, they have a power play goal now in five straight games, which is nice. But Connor talked about what happened in New Jersey. They were 1-for-6. They were 1-for-7 against the Panthers. In the grand scheme of things, their power play is still very poor, but they have a goal in five straight games. Can that be something to build on?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a very good point. So you get the confidence and you know that, well, you know, we're getting better. We're getting a goal every game or every game now in the last five, which is really important for us. Then again, you could be the Philadelphia Flyers and just go 3-for-4 and still get goals every other game or every game on the power play and be out of the playoffs. So be grateful for what you have. I think the biggest thing for Montreal is that they do have some consistency and they do have an identity. It's one of the best defensive teams in the league, and they can score. Do they score easily? No, but they can score.
There had been some talk of Alex Ovechkin supplanting Carey Price at the head of the Hart Trophy race after Price spent most of the season as the odds-on favorite. But interesting piece on TSN.ca today. Bob McKenzie polls 20 head coaches, 10 from each conference. Pierre, unanimously, they all had Carey Price number one on their ballots.
Well, and again, I go around the league and I talk to these same coaches of Bobby Mack, obviously interviews, and they all love Carey Price, and they would love to have Carey Price, even the ones that have good goalies, because of the consistency level of Carey's play. And that's one of the things that you have to look at. But again, it comes down to what we talked about before. Their goals against is one of the best in the National Hockey League. I think the Rangers actually are the only one that's better, and they haven't played as many games, if I remember correctly. And so you look at that, but they don't score as easily, and that's the other thing. So take Carey Price off the team, and where are they? A lot of people think maybe, you know, battling for the last playoff spot or maybe not even in the playoffs. They're down where Pittsburgh and Detroit and Ottawa and Florida are and Boston. So, again, there's a lot to be said about Carey and what he's done. Ovechkin's had a phenomenal year, though. I can't take it when people start beating this guy up for no reason. There were other years they deserved to get beat up a little bit because he wasn't conforming and wasn't helping the team. He's only helping himself. This guy's helping his team unbelievably this year. He's had a fantastic season.
He's had so many fantastic seasons, and we're watching one of the great scorers of all time. How do you think this season measures up to the great ones he's had before? Is this the best?
Much better because he's a team player. It's not about him. It's about the team. And so that's one of the things that really helps a lot. You can see him committed defensively. You can see him committed on the back check. You can see him committed to moving the puck rather than trying to toe drag guys all the time. So it's more about conforming to the team and the principles of the new coaching staff led by Barry Trotz. And I would say this has probably been his best season.
Curious, Pierre, about where you think the goaltending position is headed. And I'll let you know my thinking a little bit. They've become so good and so athletic. I was taking a look at some of the stats today. Cam Talbot is 15th in the league, so halfway through the league right. In save percentage. His save percentage is .926. 15 years ago, that would be up there for the best goalie in the league.
Right.
And now it's middle of the pack, 15th at .926. What's the next step of evolution here for goalies? Is it handling the puck? Is it being incorporated into game plans and being like a soccer goalie where they're into the offense a little bit more? What's the next step here? Because I don't see how they can stop the puck any more effectively than they're doing right now.
I know there's an appetite amongst some general managers, not all, and some people at the league office, not all, to potentially raise the crossbar. Not change the width of the net, but change the length of the net. Because what you've seen from these goalies that are so athletic that you're alluding to, watch how many spectacular saves they make that are low along the ice because they take away the bottom part of the net, and they do it so well. But would they flop down as quickly? Would they butterfly as quickly if the nets were elevated maybe, I don't know, 6 to 8 inches? Would they drop as quickly? I don't think so. So that might open up more scoring, and that would be the big revelation for the goalies, is how are they going to combat that extra room. Now, I'm not saying that's happening, but I can tell you from some of the discussions I've had with some different hockey people, both at the league level and also at the team level, that's something that they're seriously thinking about experimenting with.
That's fascinating. I hadn't heard that anywhere yet, Pierre. And it would ensure that goalies don't have many easy saves, right?
Well, it would make them stay up more and challenge. And so then you could potentially score along the ice a little easier. Maybe it would reduce the size factor of some of these players. That's the biggest thing. I was talking, again, to somebody that does this for a living in terms of working with numbers. And the average size of goalies today compared to when Jacques Plante was playing or Charlie Hodge was playing, you know, you're talking apples and oranges in terms of the size. And the kids just keep getting bigger all the time. I know of a young fella who's 14 years of age in Connecticut. He's 6'4", and he's one of the premier goalie prospects in the entire country, probably in the whole hockey world. And he plays like he's 5'10", but he's 6'4". And he's only 14. How big is he going to be when he's finished growing? And I can tell you, he's a phenomenal athlete.
Trying to picture him at a high school dance. 6'4" at the age of 14. That's incredible.
And he's not playing basketball. I mean, basketball, you can understand. But in hockey, especially at that position, where you're defending a net that hasn't changed in size since the beginning of hockey. That's tough to take.
So the meanwhile, Pierre, yesterday it was the Steve Mason show. He withstood a barrage there, especially in the third period, and the Flyers get a big win, largely meaningless for them, but they sweep the season series against the Penguins. 46 saves, so they threw everything they could at Mason, but geez, I mean, what's going on in Pittsburgh right now?
Oh, a lot. I mean, I've been telling Mitch for a while, I've been concerned about their group. You could see this coming a mile away if you're around their team. Lethargic, not really having an identity, star players, one that's performing and another one that's in and out of the lineup, talking about Malkin due to his health. They really miss Christopher Letang. He's such an important part of their team. He's averaging over 25, almost around 25 minutes a game. And Christian Yerhoff is averaging a little over 23 minutes a game. Then you lose Olli Maatta, who is about 20 minutes a game right from the start of the year. Then you compound that with the losses of Orpech and Niskanen. I don't know too many teams that can overcome that stuff, you know, and so that's a bit of a problem. And then you take 40 goals out of the lineup from James Neal. You don't have Pascal Dupuis. I'm not making excuses for the Penguins. I'm just telling you what the stats are. The reality is, you know, what did people expect? This is a tough situation that they're in. Really tough. I feel terrible for their coaching staff because one of them I won a Stanley Cup with, and I can tell you he's an unbelievably fierce competitor in Rick Tocchet. And spending time with him yesterday, I mean, they're, as a coaching staff, they're working as hard as they can. They just, you're limited because of everything that's gone on around the group.
In the game yesterday, they came out flying in that first period.
Well, they were smart. That was because of the coaches. They were using the stretch pass, and they were breaking down the neutral zone coverage of the Philadelphia Flyers. I showed that on TV. You probably saw that, Mitch Gallo. Mm-hmm. And because of that, they were opening up so much more space because whenever they've played against Philadelphia in earlier games, Philly was playing a passive 1-2-2 and taking away everything in the neutral zone because of the Penguins trying to play with skill. So instead, how do you break that down? You break it down by stretching them out and creating seams through the middle of the ice, and they were able to do that.
I wanted to ask you about Sean Couturier of the Flyers, who is a guy I had a chance to watch quite a bit in junior in Drummondville, and I see him making a play like that pass to Ryan White for sort of that dagger goal yesterday, and I know a lot of Flyers fans feel that he could do more. He could be more of a contributor. He could be more than a checking forward, but that's not going to happen under Craig Berube. What do you think about Couturier and what he could be?
Well, first of all, he had back-to-back 96-point seasons in Drummondville, so it's not like he doesn't know how to play offense. He knows how to play offense, and his World Junior year in Buffalo in 2010, he was sick. He was coming off mono. I can tell you in the summertime, three players stood out at that camp. One of them was Sean Couturier. The other one was Louis LeBlanc. And the third one was Jaden Schwartz. And Couturier, of all those three, and one of them was obviously ripping the NHL up, and Jaden Schwartz, Couturier was the best of those three at that camp in Newfoundland. I can tell you that right now. Couturier's biggest thing is he got put in the league as an 18-year-old, and they put him in and pigeonholed him right away as a face-off specialist and a checking center and a penalty killer. A little bit like what happened with Jordan Staal. The difference is that Jordan Staal had Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin ahead of him. You know, in Philadelphia, it's a little different for Couturier because he doesn't have those guys. Yes, they have Giroux ahead of him, and he should be. But now they've got to figure a way to squeeze more offense out of him. And I can tell you, Craig Berube on the bench is always encouraging Sean Couturier to play offensively. I can tell you that.
So you think he could be the number two behind Giroux?
I do. I do think he can. I also think there's a chance that Braden Schenn, if he could play the way he's played the last 10 days, he could be a number two as well. Let's remember, too, they're missing 28 goals from Wayne Simmonds. Once he gets back in the lineup next, he's got a broken leg blocking a shot, or getting hit with a shot, I should say. You know, their team is a work in progress. What they need to do more than anything else, forgetting Shannon, Couturier, and Simmonds, what they need to do is they need to make their defense better, and I think they can. They've got some in-house prospects like Travis Sanheim, who's a first-round pick, plays for Calgary Hitmen. They've got Shane Gostisbehere, kid out of Union College, who's been hurt this year, is a tremendous prospect. They've got another guy, Robert Hogg, who's playing in the American Hockey League right now, a kid that played at Modo. They've got Samuel Morin, who's a 6'5", almost 6'6", defenseman with Rimouski, who is a first-round pick. They've got prospects on defense, so that's going to be a quicker turnaround in Philly than people think.
We talked about Pittsburgh, but another Eastern team in free fall is the Detroit Red Wings. Pierre, I know you're close to that situation, too. What's going on, and can they right that ship?
Well, he's got to step up. I mean, the coach is coaching great game plans. The players are playing great game plans. They've had more than enough chances to score. I mean, Tatar had a real good chance yesterday against Washington to tie the game up. He hits the post. But the goalies have been up and down. I mean, Jimmy Howard should be a lot better than what he's shown. He's got to be more consistent. And, okay, let's put it this way. Detroit will do this. We'll play this hypothetical game. Detroit will give you Jimmy Howard, and you will give them Carey Price.
Well,
want to play that game?
Well, I don't think the Canadians
are in first place.
Yeah.
I don't think so either. So that's been a big problem for Detroit.
So who's their starting goaltender game one of the playoffs, assuming they get there? Is it Mrazek? Is it Jimmy
now,
Howard?
I'd have to say Peter Mrazek.
It's crazy to
think. I'd have to say that. I mean, if you look at, again, the bigger games. And Jimmy played great in Minnesota Saturday night. He should get a pat on the back for that. That's a crazy back-to-back or two, especially when you lose time on time zone travel like Detroit had to do. But Jimmy played well on Saturday, but I still think Mrazek probably gets a bit of an edge.
Thanks, Pierre.
Oh, great visiting with you, Connor. Take care. Have a good day, everybody.
Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.